I promise you we'll get back to sports coming up momentarily, and I'm going to tie this all together. I've been watching a lot of documentaries since I'm in the process of making another one. It's called Armageddon at Arrowhead. It's about the 2007 game between Missouri and Kansas. You can go see it at Screenland Armor starting September 24th. Rob, have you seen this most recent Netflix documentary about the high school girl and the catfish? Have you seen this on your...
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes, I saw this.
One of the craziest plot twists that I've ever seen.
So I'm not going to ruin it. The end...
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not here to ruin it for anybody. I'm just telling you... You know, Netflix documentaries, they got a way of just, like, blowing your mind that you're like, oh, my goodness. I never seen anything like this, ever. Not one time. I just had to share that with somebody. I don't know why I had that written down. I was like, oh, we got to talk about this. There's not a lot left time in the show to talk about it. If you haven't seen it, please, because I know you're going to get busy here over the next couple of days. There's football on Thursday. There's football on Friday. MU and KU play on Saturday. We're all going to be very busy these next couple of days. This Netflix document, I'm telling you, it's nuts. I've never seen anything like it.
I audibly screamed at the television at the end. Like that, I'm not trying to overhype the twist. At the end, I was like, what? The entire time. Go watch it.
Yeah, mine was no. No. I was like, no, no, no chance. No, you're lying to me. I didn't even believe it. Even when they gave me the evidence, I still didn't believe it. Didn't really make any sense. That's a side note from what we're talking about. The only reason I was thinking about that is because the Los Angeles Chargers, I think they have proven to be a catfish. I've fallen for the catfish with the Los Angeles Chargers. You guys will never let me live that down. I think I'd like to think that I've done some pretty cool things in my career. You know, I like to think that I've had a lot of success here and plan on having more success. You guys will never let me live down the one time I picked the Chargers in the division. Because I got catfished. That's what happened. I got catfished by the Chargers. Can you at least not see how you fall for it? Can you at least not see how? I mean, they got a good quarterback. They score a lot of points. I mean, you can see how someone can get catfished by the Los Angeles Chargers. They run the same scheme every single year. But I've told myself this time, no, no, no. I will not fall for it. Not at all. I will not fall victim to this latest scam that they are going to run. People on the text line are asking, what's the name of the documentary? I believe it's called Unknown Number. That's what it is. Unknown Number is the name of it. Just go on Netflix. It's, you know how they always tell you like what's trending. You'll see it at the top of your Netflix screen if you go on the app. I think there's three questions in the AFC. And we will have these questions, I think, for the most part, answered in the first month of the season. That's the way the Chiefs' schedule lines up. The Chiefs don't play a schedule where there's going to be no one in week four after watching the Chiefs. Like, man, the Chiefs haven't really played anybody. I mean, think about who the Chiefs' opponents are. The Chiefs play a playoff team from last year in their division that people think is the second best team in the division. At least they were last year with a very solid head coach, a capable quarterback. This is the legitimate week one test for both teams. The second game of the season, they play the one team that they do not match up well against, which is the Philadelphia Eagles, the one team that looks like they have their number in the entire rest of the league. Week three, they play the Giants. Now, I don't think the Giants are going to be very good, but it's also a team in New York, so that always comes with a certain hype and a certain buzz. A team that has a very, very good defensive line that can get after the other team's quarterback. And then the last game of the month, they play the Baltimore Ravens, who people think could go to the Super Bowl this year. So there will be no one who has questions about the Chiefs after the first month of the season, if with a rookie left tackle and inexperienced left guard, your number one wide receiver out for all four of those games, if the Chiefs are 3-1 after the first month of the season, I would say that they have answered the biggest question in the AFC. Are the Chiefs still the Chiefs? I know you guys hate this analogy. You hate when people bring this up, but it happened. We have never seen a championship-level team like the Chiefs get knocked out like that in front of everybody. Mike Tyson, for as great of a fighter he was never the same after he lost to Buster Douglas. After we saw that the big bad hero was invincible, he never was the same champion again. We saw the Chiefs get knocked out in front of everybody. I'm really curious to see how the Chiefs respond to that. especially because the team that knocked you out is on the schedule in the early part of the season. Like, the Chiefs aren't that much different than the team that got knocked out. Like, they have returned a lot of those same pieces. So you have to at least be in the back of your mind wondering, man, how are the Chiefs going to respond to how their season ended? So much of last season was about the three-peat and the chase for immortality and being the greatest dynasty of all time. That is all over now. Now it is a, can we get back to the Super Bowl? So that's just a big storyline for the first part of the season is, are the Chiefs still the Chiefs? And I'm happy that we'll get that answer early on. If the Chiefs go 3-1 in the first month of the season, I don't want to hear about hangover or any of those things. The conversation is done. If you beat Philadelphia, you beat Baltimore, and you beat the Chargers in week one, I don't want to hear about, they're the Chiefs. They've always been the Chiefs. So that's number one. Number two, eventually, I don't know when this is going to be, you would think that Buffalo or Baltimore, one of those teams, win. I've been watching this Cowboys documentary. I've been watching a lot of Netflix lately. Eventually, San Francisco beat the Cowboys. Now, they only beat them the one time. Steve Young only has the one championship. But eventually, the 49ers beat the Cowboys. Now, the Cowboys got three championships out of it, and we remember them more fondly than we do the Niners in the 90s. But eventually, they got their moment in the sun. I don't know if Buffalo and Baltimore get moments in the sun, but NFL history tells you that one of those teams will eventually get it. When is that? Is that in 2026? Is it in 2027, 2028? I don't know when the Chiefs run, I guess, ends in this context. But is Baltimore and or Buffalo ready to take that next step? They have been very close, knocking on the door for the last 4 years. And neither one of those teams have been able to walk through. They've come really, really close. And every single time the Chiefs slam the door in their face and laugh at them for them even thinking and entertaining the possibility of them beating Kansas City in a game that really, really matters. I'm not talking about a Week 11 game on CBS. I'm talking about the Week 20 game on CBS, and they don't win those games. So number one, are the Chiefs still the Chiefs? We'll see. Is Buffalo or Baltimore ready to take that next step? I know it'll be very early on in the season, but Kansas City plays one of these teams early on in the season. Buffalo and Baltimore play each other week one of the NFL season. Baltimore plays both of these teams in the first 4 weeks of the season. Baltimore opens up the season against Buffalo. They also open up the season against Kansas City. If Baltimore wins both of those games, people will talk about them like they are the favorite in the AFC. Even though it's early in the season and you got to prove it in late January and you got to prove it in February, if Baltimore goes on the road and wins in Buffalo and in Kansas City, people will consider them to be the favorites in the AFC. And then the last question is anybody going to come close? I think we all know about those three teams. Everybody is picking those three teams to make the postseason. I don't know anybody that has Buffalo missing the postseason or Baltimore missing the postseason because that's not realistic to me if those teams keep their quarterback the entire season. But I think the question is there anybody else that's going to enter this conversation? Is Denver good enough to enter this conversation? Is Pittsburgh going to be good enough for us to be talking about them late? Can the Chargers figure things out? What about Houston? Is there a surprise team that we don't know about? What about Cincinnati? A couple of years ago, they were in this conversation. They were not in this conversation in the last 2 years. It's impossible to be in this conversation if you keep missing the postseason the way that they have. And if they miss the postseason this year three straight times after they've paid everybody, Zach Taylor, he'll be the offensive coordinator for Alabama is where he'll be at the end of this thing. So that's what I think we're talking about as we are heading into week one of the NFL season. Are the Chiefs still the Chiefs? Buffalo and Baltimore, are they ready to take the next step? Like, you guys just don't believe it. And I get it. If you keep beating a team every time in January, at some point seeing is believing. So it doesn't matter what Buffalo says or does. Same thing for Baltimore. You, the Chiefs fan, you will never believe it until you absolutely see it. And they got to do it. They got to prove it. I was born and raised in the Show Me State. You might not have been, but you feel the same sentiment. You got to show us that you're better than Kansas City. And that's not in a week four game. You got to show us late in the season in January because Mahomes has shown you every time that he will figure out a way to win. And we have spent this entire time talking about three teams. None of these other teams have given you a reason to consider them. Who can that team potentially be? Or is this going to be the same season that we've had? This comes down to who gets the one seed, who gets to play the AFC South winner in the second game of the postseason, and then who gets the home game between Kansas City, Buffalo, or Baltimore? Or is there going to be another team that crashes the party? Usually in the NFL, there's somebody else that crashes the party. Can that team potentially emerge? We can take your phone calls on this. We can read your text if you would like. We are heading into week one of the NFL season. We are days away from Cowboys and Eagles and also Chiefs and Chargers. Keep it right here. So drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you. Earlier today, we played this audio. I want to play it for you again if you missed it. I try not to make it a habit to disagree with the legends, with the veterans. I try to respect our elders. I'm not here to argue with Warren Buffett about investing. I'm not here to argue with Dr. Dre on musical selection, you know? These are the GOATs. These are the legends. I hate that Joe Montana has put me in a position and where I have to disagree with Joe Montana about quarterbacks. You're Cool Joe. You're one of the five greatest quarterbacks to ever live. You're 4-0 in the Super Bowl. Joe, how could you be so wrong?
I'm taking the guy in Buffalo.
Okay, Josh Allen.
Yeah, all right. Josh. You know, the guy that surprised me that I thought would, obviously, Joe Burrow's another guy I like a lot. Believe it or not, I like the guy in the with the Chargers. Herbert. I think they just kind of, they've kind of gone by the wayside there. But I don't know. I just like the way those three guys are.
BA, how do you feel about his talk?
I do also like the guy in Philly though. And we'll get most.
Yeah. Jalen Hurts, okay. Won a Super Bowl. We do like him. Brock Purdy, obviously number one. He was left out.
Correct.
Josh Allen, yeah. Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and Jalen Hurts is his Mount Rushmore outside of Brock Purdy. BA, did you expect that from Joe Montana?
I thought he might have thrown Patrick Mahomes in there, but you know, I think it states how.
Well, I think I would have if he was younger.
Joe, there is no world in which I am picking Justin Herbert over Patrick Mahomes. I don't care the age difference at this stage in their life. I also find it a little bit dishonest. And again, I'm not here to poke holes in the legend. I'm not here to do that to the GOAT. Patrick Mahomes is 8 months older than Josh Allen. Patrick Mahomes was born on September 17th, 1995. Josh Allen was born in May of 1996. So if you're going to take Josh Allen and age is not going to be a factor, I don't know how you can now leave Patrick Mahomes off of the list and age is why you were leaving them off the list. That part just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And you guys know where I am on Justin Herbert. I don't understand how somebody who played in and won the amount of big games that Joe Montana played in. I mean, he was the quarterback of the dynasty of the 80s. The dynasty of the 80s is the San Francisco 49ers. They went to 4 Super Bowls. He won all of them. He and Bill Walsh are one of the greatest quarterback coach combinations in the history of the National Football League. You are a part of one of the most iconic plays in league history, the catch by Dwight Clark. I can go up and down the resume of Joe Montana. I don't have to tell you how good Joe Montana is. How can you accomplish all of those things and then take Justin Herbert to start your team? It blows my mind. What has Justin Herbert done? What big game has he won? How has he risen to the occasion, to the moment? If Justin Herbert announced that he was retired right now, the way that Andrew Luck did, we would have absolutely nothing to remember Justin Herbert by. Not a single memory. Not a positive one. If Justin Herbert retired right now, the way that Andrew Luck did, we talk about how he didn't win a playoff game. We talk about how they blew that playoff lead to the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's the guy that you're placing your faith in? Couldn't be me. Again, I'm not here to argue with the legends. I'm not here to argue with the GOATs. Joe Montana is one of the greatest football players to ever live, one of the most accomplished football players to ever play in the National Football League. But I'm here to say this, and I say this with the utmost respect. He has no clue what he's talking about. Not even, not a small, not a morsel of clue of what he's talking about. He shouldn't even be allowed to give these opinions over public airwaves. He should be fined by the FCC. This is inappropriate content for children. They listen to this stuff, and now they believe you because you're Joe Montana. I can't believe he went on the Pat McAfee show and said this nonsense earlier today.
The age part really boggles my mind. Because, like, I'm not defending his comments, but if he had picked, like, three rookies or second-year players, oh, it makes more sense for his age. Joe Burrow is a year younger than Patrick Mahomes. Joe Burrow feels a lot younger because he came into our lives later, but he played a lot of college football.
He did.
He's 28. You already mentioned Josh Allen's age, but no, out on Mahomes because he's 29. That just absolute, the logic's just bad. Like, I cannot believe he didn't pick Patrick Mahomes. Like, if Patrick Mahomes was 39, okay, leave him off the list. You don't want to start your franchise with a 39-year-old, whatever. In the prime of his career, no, but yes on Joe Burrow at 28. Just, and I don't, that's not even disrespect to Joe Burrow. What? Just, also, we're going to cruise past it, but McAfee said he automatically is putting Brock Purdy on his list, and he said, yes, I had to pick three outside of Brock Purdy. Why is Brock Purdy an auto ad?
He's the quarterback of San Francisco. I get why in this context you're putting Brock Purdy. I'm not even mad at that. He said so many other egregious things that taking the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, I'm going to let that one slide. I mean, I'm not going to let too much of this other nonsense slide, but I'm going to let that slide. I'm going to let Joe off the hook. This isn't good, Joe. I'm here to tell you this isn't good. These are, I know they say that your opinion can't be wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is incorrect is what it is. This is incorrect. It cannot be right. It's impossible that you are right. Let's get back to this Andy Reid audio. Earlier today, he met with the media to talk about the status for Hollywood Brown.
Look good out there. Run around and, you know, he's getting the game and play. So, but he's, as far as practice goes, he's done everything.
I want to play for you guys what Hollywood Brown had to say. He was asked if he feels pressure because of the Rashee Rice suspension.
Not really. I mean, we know what we could do. You know, when guys go down, it's next man up. When I went down, it's next man up. And that's our mentality throughout the whole team. So for us, it's just doing what we do.
Rob, let's talk about this for a little bit because I guess twofold. You have been maybe more critical about the Chiefs and their ability to kind of have those big plays kind of return to the offense. I'm not as worried about it. I think they'll figure it out. Eventually, they'll get Rashee Rice back. Another year in the offense for Xavier Worthy. Hollywood Brown is there. I don't think they're going to be the 2018 Chiefs offense, but I don't think that they'll be ranked 17th in points scored this year. I think their offensive line will just have more cohesiveness. I think their run game is going to be better, and I think that's one aspect that we're not just talking enough about, that last year, certainly in the second half of the Chiefs season, the Chiefs just couldn't run the football effectively. I think they'll be able to run the football effectively this year where they couldn't last season. Where's your confidence level heading into this early portion of the season with the wide receivers that they do have? We agree they are not bringing in outside reinforcements. They're not trading anybody. They're not picking up anybody on waivers. This is the wide receiver group that the Chiefs are going to have for the early portion of the season. I feel pretty good about where they are at wide receiver. I don't want to make it seem like this is one of the best rooms in the National Football League, but if there is any team that's kind of learned how to manage without their number one wide receiver, it's Kansas City. I mean, they haven't had Rashee Rice. I mean, it will be over a year since he was last on the field. So as a offensive team, as a staff, in terms of scheming, you should be kind of used to not having him be there. Their wide receiver room, in my opinion, is better today than it was in the AFC Championship game, than it was in the Super Bowl. If you're going to have a healthier version of Hollywood Brown, I really think that Tyquan Thornton is not being discussed nearly enough in this thing. I got confidence that they got something with Tyquan Thornton. I'm not expecting him to go out and be a high-level impact player, but we're talking about a guy who is still a very young player, a guy who, this is the Brett Veach special we talk so much about. We know that Brett Veach kind of loves those high draft picks, first, second, third round picks that maybe failed in their first organization, and now you got a chance at success in your next spot. I mean, these are the kind of players that I want Kansas City rolling the dice on and taking chances with. If he can stay healthy this year, I think he can be a positive contributor. We're talking about a 25-year-old who was a second-round pick who would technically still be on his rookie contract. If you like the Kadarius Toney move, I don't know how you can dislike this move with Tyquan Thornton. They're almost the same player, just one doesn't have nearly the off-field baggage as the other player. So if you came into this thing excited or hopeful about what Kadarius Toney could be, I don't know why people wouldn't share a lot of that same sentiment when it comes to Tyquan Thornton. If this team can get Xavier Worthy, Hollywood Brown, and Thornton can kind of step in as that third receiver, you got enough at wideout, especially with the tight ends that you have and the versatility you have at running back with Pacheco, short yardage back, and I think Rashard Smith is going to factor into the pass game. They got enough at wide receiver to get them by until Rice comes back.
I think they have enough to get them by, but I think for a team and a fan base and a city that spoke all offseason about being more explosive and more dynamic and getting back to, you know, their roots, for lack of a better term, in 2025, the idea of their wide receivers just being good enough is not good enough to live up to those expectations. So you asked what my confidence level is in the wide receivers going into these first 6 weeks at Rasheed. On a scale of 1 to 10, 6.5, I have a lot of confidence in Xavier Worthy. I probably am more bullish on him than you are. I would buy lot of Xavier Worthy stock right now. Like, I understand that these catches didn't count and he missed probably three or four big plays because he just forgot the length or width of the football field, but those things seem to be getting cleaned up later in the season, and I'm a believer that he can go from a 650 guy to a, you know, 850, 900-yard guy in the NFL. So I'm a huge believer in him.
I think he can be that, just for the record. I think he can be that.
And maybe a little juiced-up stats this year because of the first 6 weeks, but I'm a real big Xavier Worthy fan. After that, I think you can poke holes in the Chiefs wide receiver room pretty quickly with Rashee Rice injury. Hollywood Brown had a great season 1 year, and I believe it was Baltimore, maybe it was Arizona. I forget, he had the one season that he was incredible. He's had good seasons outside of that. We have never seen him in Kansas City, and I know that he's healthy now, and Andy Reid for 12 seconds talked about him practicing, but I have to see it to believe it. Juju Smith-Schuster, you told me earlier in the show you think he's done. So let's take that for what it's worth. Jalen Royals is hurt. Let's put him to the side for a little bit. I am probably not as high as a lot of people are on Tyquan Thornton because I know the Veach special, second-round pick, the speed. I get all this stuff. And the Chiefs may have found a Justin Watson type. And if they did, great. But I don't think Justin Watson types are going to make the offense go from 17th in points and looking sluggish at times last year to dynamic and explosive. So that's your wide receiver room. I have it at 6.5 out of 10 confidence, but a lot of that confidence is carried by the fact I am very high on Xavier Worthy in 2025. And outside of that, it's a lot of unknown commodities that we think can be good, but unknown commodities could go either direction. And then a guy who you told me earlier in the show is washed.
Yeah, the big thing to me I'm looking forward with Xavier Worthy is I just think they need to be maybe more efficient with the opportunities. So to kind of put this into perspective, last year Xavier Worthy had 98 targets. Jordan Addison had 99 targets, so virtually the same. Jordan Addison got thrown the ball one more time than Xavier Worthy did. He had 250 more yards than Xavier Worthy did last year. Nico Collins, we both like Nico Collins, right? One of the better wide receivers in the league. Nico Collins also had one more target than Xavier Worthy did. He had 400 more yards receiving with just one more opportunity. So part of it to me is going to be, I think I have a good idea of what the volume is going to be for Xavier Worthy. Can you be more efficient with those opportunities? And to the point that you just made, last year to me, it wasn't about volume. He got 100 targets last year. He got 98 targets, basically 100 targets. He had less than 650 yards on 98 targets, where, again, Jordan Addison had 99 targets for 875 yards. Nico had 99 targets for 1,000 yards. So even if Xavier Worthy doesn't get much more of a volume than what he got, can you raise that number from 600 to 875? I think everybody would take him being Jordan Addison. Jordan Addison is a really, really good number two receiver. So if you're telling me that whenever Rashee Rice comes back, Rashee Rice is your prototypical, I don't think he'll get there this year because of games played, but if he can be on a pace to be your 1,100, 1,200-yard receiver, and you're telling me that your number two receiver trends to be a Jordan Addison type, I think you'll more than take that if you're the Kansas City Chiefs of the kind of prospect that I think the Xavier Worthy is going to be. So last year, they took a lot of chances at home runs. They swung and missed on a lot of those opportunities with Xavier Worthy. You don't have to connect on all of those. If they could have connected on three of those plays over the course of the 17-game season, that's an extra 170 yards last year on big plays, long touchdowns that kind of shift the balance of the game. You give him an extra 150, 175 yards, you have him at 800 yards as a guy, and I think you can live with that as him being a number two wide receiver.
I think that's what his kind of his career will look like, but I think in these first 6 weeks, I think his usage and his targets could look similar to what they did with Rashee Rice toward the end of the 2023 season. And this is no disrespect to Rashee Rice. You remember as well as I do. At the end of the season, you were clamoring, hey, the only people that can touch the football in this 2023 team are Kelce, Rice, Pacheco. That's it. And the Chiefs basically did that and rode themselves to a Super Bowl. But at the end, they were force-feeding targets and force-feeding catches to Rashee Rice. And it worked. He was dynamic in the playoffs. He was really good. And then he then took the next step, and early in his second year, he looked like he could be one of those guys. He got hurt. Now he's suspended. We'll see what happens. Rashee Rice, I think in these first, not Rashee Rice, excuse me, Xavier Worthy, in these 6 weeks where Rashee Rice is not in the lineup, you can force feed him targets a little bit. You can kind of goose up his catch numbers the way they did with Rashee Rice toward the end of 2023. And if you're doing that, maybe just for 2025, with it being a guy who we think is an 800, 900-yard guy on the regular with goosed-up numbers because of a suspension, he could be tiptoeing around 1,000 in 2025, which is why I'm a lot more confident in the Chiefs receiver room than most, is because I have a lot of confidence in Xavier Worthy.
I'll give you a toss-up question that's just popped in my head. If I told you that one of these two players has a career year, they have the best version of themselves this season, I tell you it's Hollywood Brown or Charles Omenihu, who do you think it is?
Omenihu?
Because you would agree, they are probably in the exact same spot.
Correct.
Charles Omenihu is the Hollywood Brown for the defense.
Exactly. I would say Omenihu. I guess we can say all these same things about Hollywood Brown. We've never really seen Omenihu at full go. In Kansas City. I know he was, I guess, full go at the beginning of the season. There was the suspension, and then last year there was the injury, and he was kind of slow coming back from it. I think Omenihu is more likely to have the career year, but they are the same. They are each the same thing on offense and defense.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm curious what you guys think. 913-586-7965. If I told you that one of these two players have a career year and have the best version of themselves, who do you think it would be? Do you think it would be Hollywood Brown or Charles Omenihu? I would say that the two are almost identical. Both are back on one-year deals, probably thought they'd be playing somewhere else, whether it was through injury, whatever happened, they're back on the Chiefs on a team-friendly one-year deal. Both of them are under 30, so your time is kind of running out to get that big-time deal. If Hollywood doesn't get paid next offseason, then he ain't never getting paid that kind of money in the National Football League. I also say the exact same thing for Charles Omenihu. Teams have shown you they'll pay for pass rush, even if you were the second, third kind of pass rusher. If Omenihu goes out there and has 9.5 sacks this season and stays healthy and is a key part of a championship-level defense, there is going to be a team that pays Charles Omenihu very, very handsomely at the end of this season. You just got to go out there and put that year together. You're right. It's always been kind of something with Charles Omenihu. His first year, he didn't start the early part of the season because he was suspended. Last year, he wasn't on the field for the early portion of the season because of the leg injury. It kind of sounds like Hollywood Brown last year. Can you keep those two guys on the field? Can you keep them healthy? Can you get the productivity that you expected them to be? We obviously got to see as the season gets going.
I know this is not your point, but I'm curious. Let's say Hollywood Brown has a career year. Define the type of one of those contracts he's going to get, because I think he missed the window for the super money. Now, I don't have his contract in front of me. When he got traded to Arizona, he may have already checked the box for super money, because I remember that was a big deal. The Ravens traded him away. I believe they got a first-round pick back. It was a massive trade. You'd imagine when those sort of things happen in the NFL, the Cardinals pay him. But he's going to be 29 next offseason. Even if he has 750 to 900. Do you think he's getting like a whoa contract? I think the whoa days for him, like money wise, are gone.
No, I mean, he actually never got that deal. So they
Which is very surprising with the trade. Well, now I hear that.
I mean, they picked up his fifth year option, and then that was kind of it. They then let him walk in free agency. He signed back to back 1 year, $7 million deals. Is that what happened? I mean, you might be right when it comes to Hollywood. I mean, he's 28 years old. I mean, Juju was a little bit younger than this when he ended up signing his deal. I mean, I guess I would just ask, like, what's number two money? Like, could he end up being Gabe Davis? I mean, Gabe Davis got, what, 3 years, $30 million?
And then immediately got cut. But, yeah, but he got paid.
He got paid and then was bad. He signed it. I just looked it up. He signed a three-year, $39 million deal. And then you're right, just got cut soon after that. Could a team give that to Hollywood if he has a really productive season? Let's say that things go A-plus for Hollywood this season. He has 60 catches for 850 yards and six touchdowns. I don't think he's signing a one-year, $7 million deal next season. Maybe he doesn't get Gabe Davis money. He gets two for 22 and gets 15 of it guaranteed. I would consider that real money for Hollywood Brown. I mean, no team has ever, outside of Baltimore, no team has committed to Hollywood Brown. He got traded to Arizona. They let his rookie contract expire. They let him go to Kansas City. He signed a one-year deal in Kansas City. They basically just offered him, hey, you can run it back at the exact same salary. He chose to run it back. I mean, this is your last chance to bite off of the apple. The salary cap is going to expand a 10%, 12%. Teams are clear on they'll pay wide receiver, and you don't got to be wide receiver one. You can be wide receiver two or wide receiver three. They will find salary cap to give to you. If you go out and put a good season together and show you can stay healthy, man, some of that money can be yours at the end of the season. You just actually got to go on the field and prove it, and it's been a while since Hollywood has proven it on the field.
I guess that's the key crux here is like defining what making that type of money is. Because like I looked it up, Darnell Mooney's a fine wide receiver.
I think he could definitely be Darnell Mooney.
He got three for 39, 26 guaranteed. I could see him getting that contract. I just think who was the receiver that the Jags signed that everyone made fun of? He was Christian Kirk.
Yep.
He ain't ever getting that contract. Now, he's older than Christian Kirk, but he's not going to get a contract that we go, can you believe he got that money? But he could easily get Darnell Mooney money. But I just think the idea of getting like the super payday, which is what you think is going to happen one day in the league.
That's over.
Dead and gone.
Yeah, no, you and I are saying the same thing, maybe just looking at it a little bit different. If you've been signing back-to-back one-year, $7 million deal, and now you sign a three-year, $39 million deal, guaranteed $26 million, and a signing bonus of $15 like Darnell Mooney, you got paid, in my opinion. I mean, that's basically what happened to Juju. Juju came to Kansas City on a one-year deal. He played exceptionally well. He cashed out with the Patriots, and basically his body has given out since then. Like, sometimes you got to know when to hold him and know when to fold him. And if you can put together that 1 year in your contract, you just got to get one team to believe in you, one team to invest, and you're set. That's all Hollywood needs. You need one good year and to convince the Los Angeles Chargers to give you a two-year, $24 million deal and $15 million guaranteed. Can he put that season together? We'll figure it out. We'll continue to talk some college football from the weekend. We'll also continue to get you ready for Week 1 Chiefs and Chargers. Keep it right here. So drive.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
For the first time in a long time, I'm willing to dream that this can be a special season for the Missouri Tigers.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
Rob, I'm willing to at least entertain this possibility for a very short period of time before we talk a little college football. Because I have a question about Kansas State. And I don't even mean it as a way of poking fun at Kansas State. I really don't. You guys haven't done anything to me this year. You guys haven't been talking slick this year. So I don't have anything negative to say about K-State. We'll get to them coming up in a bit. Do you think that we are too hard on Justin Herbert? It is a team game. Like, let's at least entertain this possibility. It is a team game. He is not the sole reason for why the Chargers have not had success. He is a good quarterback. I don't think he is a great quarterback. I wouldn't put him in the tiers above. Like, I wouldn't put him in the elite tier. I don't even think he's in that second tier. But objectively, he is a good quarterback. This is why I really struggle with Herbert in my evaluation and where to put him. Because the numbers would suggest, like if you just did a blind resume, a blind test, the numbers would suggest that Justin Herbert is a top 10 quarterback in the league and probably a little higher than that. I mean, Justin Herbert, over the last two seasons, he has completed 65% of his passes. He has 43 touchdowns and 10 interceptions the last two seasons with a passer rating at 96. He has been a very good and consistent quarterback. Where I really struggle at with Herbert is he has no memories, and he is not a quarterback that if things are really pressure-packed, if it's third and seven and you need a quarterback to make a play, I don't know if you would put Justin Herbert in your top 10. I've made this analogy. It just feels like empty calories. He feels like LaMelo Ball on the Hornets. He does a lot of cool stuff that looks really good on TikTok, really good on Instagram. LaMelo Ball has never contributed to a winning team. He has never done anything in the league on a team that matters or means anything. That's kind of how I feel about Justin Herbert. All of these stats are really, really nice. But in your two playoff games, it's not like you've gone on the road against Kansas City or on the road against Philadelphia. Like, all right, that makes sense how you could struggle against those teams. Oh, well, you went on the road against Buffalo. Oh, yeah, of course. They've played the winner of the AFC South both times. Over the last 5 years, if you could pick the playoff team you would go up against, you would pick the winner of the AFC South. They blew a massive lead to one of them, and you just got flat out outplayed by Justin or about TJ Stroud the last time. You can't throw four interceptions in the postseason game and three in the regular season and not want me to put the responsibility on you. So on one side, I do feel like, man, maybe we're a little bit hard on Justin Herbert. He is a good quarterback. He does finally now have a head coach that we like. He does have this. He does have that. But you can't be 27 years old with no accomplishments and me still put you in the conversation with the more accomplished QBs.
I agree with what you're saying 100%. I do feel like he gets lumped into a category, though, sometimes unfairly with guys who will never accomplish anything. Like, do I think Justin Herbert will win a playoff game one day? Probably. Will he win a Super Bowl? Probably not. But do I think he eventually is good enough and has enough infrastructure on him that he can have a playoff memory here or there? Of course. I do believe that about Justin Herbert because the arm talent is there and all those things. But I feel like sometimes people lump him in with Trevor Lawrence. Justin Herbert's, I know he lost to Trevor Lawrence. You would take Justin Herbert over Trevor Lawrence right now. You would take him over Tua right now, who's been to just many playoff games. Like, I think he gets lumped in with a category of losers that he's better than, but he's not as good as the next echelon, so he falls into this weird no man's land.
I would say then, though, that the only quarterback that you would put in that conversation is Dak Prescott then. He's in the Dak Prescott conversation.
And I would take Justin Herbert or Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I think they're the same.
Jordan Love also is in this conversation, by the way.
Yeah, but I would say, though, where it's a little bit different
they're
where
in
Jordan
the same
Love
draft
is,
class, by the way.
I think it's a little bit different where Jordan Love has had two seasons as a starter, where Justin Herbert has had 5 years as a starter. Now, that conversation that you want to have about Jordan Love, that's about to happen this year. They drafted you a wide receiver in round one. They just got you one of the five best defensive players in the league. If the Packers go 9-7, they ain't going to be mad at Matt LaFleur. We're going to hold the quarterback responsible that you couldn't elevate them and raise them up. What makes Justin Herbert different than Dak Prescott? Healthy regular season Dak Prescott is good. It's the postseason that you have the issue with Dak Prescott. It's the January. It's the playoff game. Can you elevate your team? But two seasons ago, Dak Prescott completed 69% of his passes, threw for 4,500 yards, 36 touchdown passes and 9 interceptions, and laid an egg in round one. Tell me that don't sound like Justin Herbert, the quarterback for the Los Angeles Chargers. So I'm with you. I'd rather have Justin Herbert than have Tua Tagovailoa. I'd rather have him than, who was the other quarterback you mentioned?
Well, I said Jordan Love.
Yeah, I wouldn't have him rather than Jordan
Trevor
Love.
Lawrence.
I'd rather have Justin Herbert than Trevor Lawrence. There's no question. But I also think I can't put him in the Brock Purdy conversation. I can't put him in the Jalen Hurts conversation. I can't put him with Jared Goff. I can't put him with Joe Burrow. Like, there's more of those good quarterbacks that your resume doesn't hold up to than it does. To me, you were just AFC version of Dak Prescott. When you're healthy, you're a very good regular season quarterback, but I do not trust you at all in critical moments, and I do not trust you in the postseason. And you have to be that until proven otherwise.
That's why I say Justin Herbert falls into a no man's land. Because, and I'm not going to rattle through all the quarterbacks I have above him, but like the Hurts, the Burrows, the Mahomes, the Allens, obviously, Purdy as well. But, like, he falls in at, like, 12th. If you were to create a top 32 quarterback list, like, sit down and go 1 to 32, text line you can think of this in your head, you would find him bumping up to the Trevor Lawrence types pretty quickly around 13, 14, 15. There's a lot of those types of guys in the league. I think he is more talented than those guys, and his resume is eerily similar to those guys, and you would probably take him ahead of those guys. Like Kyler Murray. I would take Justin Herbert over Kyler Murray in a heartbeat, but that's that nothing tier in the middle where you're like...
I think they're the same. Honestly, I think they're in that same conversation. I think there is a group of quarterbacks in the league that even though we've seen them for 5, 6, 7 years, we still keep talking about potential and what they could turn into. Well, man, you've been in the league for 7 years. When does your potential run out and we just accept what you are? Like, I'm willing to accept it because I mentioned with Jordan Love, he's had 2 seasons as a starter. This is Justin Herbert's 6th season as a starting quarterback in the National Football League. 6. You have 0 playoff wins. You've never been all pro. You've never been in the MVP conversation. You have just been a guy that's good to take in the 11th round of fantasy football. That's all you've been. Last point I want to make, and we'll get to the top of the hour. It's pretty remarkable that the Packers were able to go from one Hall of Fame quarterback to the next. I mean, the Packers had a 20-year stretch of a top-5 quarterback in the National Football League. The Chargers have not developed a quarterback in 10 years. They had that Phillip Rivers run early on in his career where they had Marty Schottenheimer as the head coach, and they had a couple of chances to make a deep run, and they usually ran into the Patriots, and that was the team that eliminated them. But probably from about 2010 until now, they have had very good, consistent regular season play when it comes to their quarterback and don't have anything else to show for it. Like, it is just transferred. They have just been stuck in this 9-7, 8-8, maybe they go 10-7. They have been stuck in this, like, this portal for the last 15 years of just being a, I don't want to call them mediocre. They are a slightly above average, better than mediocre, but nowhere close to being a true contending team. And they've been that now for 15 consecutive seasons. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk about the Royals, who are 2.5 games back in the wild card picture. We'll talk a little college football as well with week 1 wrapping up. We will eventually talk about K-State and the hits, and we'll also continue to get you ready for week 1 Chiefs and Chargers. Keep it right here, so drive.